Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder on how to join us on my podcast every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. Also, if you want to, you can participate in the Twitch stream. I co-broadcast over on Twitch, so go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall, and you will find us there. And I am trying to be very good about keeping an eye on the chat room so I can reply to said chats. And, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you want to follow me on Twitter. Also, it's sfuoncall. I also have a personal account if you want to follow me there, which was more general things and not specific to the podcast. And that is Paul Franz, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. And, of course, I'm... I was going to say raging Catholic. I guess you could call me that. I'm very much an Orioles fan, and I love all kinds of tech. And, of course, obviously, I like baseball, too. So if you want to talk about baseball, I might give you a nice little discussion. Maybe. I'm not always up to date on the different players. So, but anyhow, and, of course, I also have another account, which is Franz Games, which is totally about Franz Games. So you don't have to follow me just to get a mixture of all everything that I do. So you can just get Franz Games and you can just get the updates about the client, about Starfleet Warlord, anything that the Franz Games is doing at that moment in time. And of course, the lovely TalkCast gets into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. When it comes to ADB, not much going on there. Steve Cole's been sick a little bit lately, not done as much work as in the past. But he's still chugging along, no issues with his heart or anything like that. So he's good in that. It's just that there's not much happening currently at ADB. I'm sure you'll hear more about it. I just remembered that this is actually the first week of the month. Usually we get miniatures. I didn't see any miniatures announced on the Facebook page, so maybe slowing down just a bit. And just a reminder, of course, we have many free things from ADB at StarfleetGames.com. Just go there. You'll find all kinds of things from first missions to the cadet training manual to all kinds of things like even like desktop backgrounds. It's some really, really cool stuff, including some playtest Starfleet Battle Force game cards, things like that, which are all available for free. Moving on to SFB Online tournaments, the Sapphire Star Tournament 9 signups are now closed. It's currently delayed a little bit and starting because Mr. Patrick was sick. Gotcha. That's one of the things we did not plan for, and of course that delayed the start a little bit. He was trying to get to contact with Andy Koch, and he had issues doing that. I'm assuming they resolved it. Moving on to the SFU online client, actually got a little something done on that this week. Actually, I did work on the squadron support, meaning squadron supports for doing modifying things on a squadron level. For example, Frank LeMay, he asked for two things, and I can understand it because Frank LeMay and many others now there's more and more people doing campaigns. A lot more of what's happening on SFB Online is campaigns. And one of the things to support the campaigns is fighters. And so one of the things I did was actually support the whole idea of taking a whole squadron, and then you can change the EW for the whole squadron or change the speed for the whole squadron, all with using one click. you know, well, actually a couple of clicks, but it's a heck of a lot easier than trying to change every single fighter. Now, currently, of course, the speed change could be done if you have your selection group set up, but I'm not sure if these set up selection groups. So there's many things I probably should do is at some point create more videos about how to use the client. And of course, when it comes to FedCom Library, there's no progress for this week. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, so the one and only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, we got me. We've got Barry. Dave is probably hanging around. Don't know where he is, but I'm sure he's hanging around somewhere. So with that, hey Barry, how you doing?
Outstanding. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing good. Ben.
Yeah. What is tonight's topic?
Tonight's topic.
Doing a another ship versus ship.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about it. I went, there's one which is, I like the interaction just because of the weapon interaction. And that is the Lyran tournament cruiser versus the Hydran.
Oh, okay. You said weapon, not web. I was thinking
no,
it was going to be
weapons.
Okay.
I.e., the interaction of the ESG. ESG versus the Hellbore.
And Hellbores.
Yeah. Which I think is an interesting interaction because of the thing is with those two weapon systems, it gives the Lyran has to make some decisions on how he's going to use his ESGs, which are not in any other matchup. There is that decision is not the same just because
that's
of the
true.
Weapon interaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because
because the Hellbore automatically hits if the ESG is up.
Right, but the one thing to keep in mind about that interaction is also that it makes the ESG like a Hellbore shield.
Yes, it does.
Because the Hellbore reduces the strength of the ESG, and if the ESG is actually stronger than the Hellbore, then basically the Hellbore does nothing against the Lyran. You know?
Right.
So that's the good aspect of using the ESG. Obviously, the bad aspect, as you pointed out, is it's an automatic hit. Because even at range zero, even the Hellbore at range zero, you can miss.
Now, what's worse is that if you set the ESG for range 3, you've basically made yourself closer to the Hydran. You've made your ESG weaker. So let's say you hit the range 3 ESG. Let's say it's a 15-pointer, and you hit it with a 30-point Hellbore, or... Well, maybe not 30. Well, let's say you're one hex away from the ESG and you fire your boar. So you're four hexes away from the Lyran, but it hits the Lyran like you were at range one from the Lyran.
Right. Oh, understood, which means, you know, as I said, the downfall of that, of the automatic hit, is that if the ESGs aren't strong enough to defend off the whole Hellbores, you have to be willing to take that hit. You know, the guaranteed
hit. But it also means that And what it also means is you're never going to use any. And if you know that he's got a boar that could possibly be up, you're not going to use anything except a range zero ESG.
Right, because you're going to... Which again, it changes the calculations of how you use the ESG and how the Lyran plays. Because of course, that means you cannot use the ESG to ram people with and get damage against them that way. If the if the Hellbore's up. Because if the Hellbore's available, I'm willing to bet you that the Hydrant will fire it if they're coming in for a battle pass.
Oh, yeah.
Because the only time I can imagine that the Hydrant might not is if, let's say, the Lyran actually does arrange three ESG because he wants to ram them. In that case, the Hydra might want to let him ram him if the Lyran already has a down shield. Because obviously then you want to get as much damage on that ship as possible and just take out the ESG using your ship. But you know, that's comes down to what's the tactical situation in that case.
Yeah, that would be a rare situation where you would let the ESG actually hit in that case. Because, first of all, the ESG is weaker because they're range 3. Second of all, you can fire the boar at a longer range and very possibly overwhelm the ESG at a range where the Lyran can't really respond as well.
Right. Oh, understood. But, you know, that's... Well, it always comes down to that is the big question. Is what does Lyran do when the Hellbore is available? Or do you think the Hellbore might be available? Because it is possible for them to be in mixed cycles because, of course, you have the 32 impulse cooldown time for the ESG. So it can be almost a two-turn turnaround. Almost. Obviously, you can, when it comes to cooldown, one thing I do forget is whether you can charge it while it's cooling down.
I don't believe you can.
So it's more like the fusions, where you can't charge them until the cooldown period is ended.
So it's cooled. Yeah.
Yeah. I said that was one of the things I do not know. Okay. Let me just go like this. Because one thing I wanted to do, which was share with everybody here, except for you, is the Lyran. Just to give people an idea of what it looks like. Who's on the video. So I was a standard Lyran with two ESG, eight phaser ones, and two phaser threes.
Two P3s. Yep, and 40 power.
Yep.
Burn mode C.
Yep.
And I remember that.
Yeah, and I remember them actually modifying this ship. Because if I call correctly... Mm-hmm. The original ones was actually the phaser threes are left side, right side, not 360.
Yes. Well, the standard SSD
right.
for the ship for in the before tournaments was left side, right side.
Right. Right, and they changed it for the tournament because actually originally the tournament was the same way. Way back in the day.
Yeah.
I do mean like the original module T, module T for SFB. Because I remember when they did that. I'm that old. I'm playing. Play tournaments for that long. And of course, then we have the Hydran Lord Marshall with the. Two Hellbores, the four fusions, which are interesting by themselves. Of course, the two phaser Gs and the two fighters.
And the five phase ones.
And the what?
Two fighters.
Yep. And of course,
the two fighters and the five phaser ones.
Yep. Yes. And the large section of center hull, which is the way the Hydra's designed, which.
Yes.
I still remember to this day, Paul Scott, the venerable multiple-rated ace Paul Scott said, "I'm going to win the gold hat with the Hydrin." After being knocked out twice in the Hydrin, he went, "I'm going to go to the ISC." Well, the big issue with the Hydrin is the Hydrin is very susceptible, I'm going to pronounce it right, to Mizzy attacks. And that's what he kept on dying on, is that the weapons were wiped out. Which, obviously, the key to for the Hydrin to avoid that, speed, maneuverability. Or at least you have to have the ability to, after that, you get that down shield against you. And you're playing the Hydrin, that you're able to turn or fly by so that shield is just not available anymore. Probably turn is probably going to be your best maneuver at that point, because of given that most of the weapons are forward arc, that's where you're going to be firing, using your front shields, possibly even the shield number one, which obviously, like any other ship, you don't want to lose your shield number one. But that's standard for most ships. You don't want to lose your shield number one, because most ships, not all, but most ships, if you lose your shield number one, you are in deep trouble. In that it makes it harder to fight. Though you can still fight out shield number two and shield number six. That's the truth for most ships.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, one thing with the Hydrin itself is, of course, it has the hellebore, big surprise. But, of course, then you have those fusions.
Yes, you do.
And those...
Which can dish out a lot of damage.
Yeah, especially close in. Because, of course, one of the more famous maneuvers is Hydrin form of the for the tractor maneuver is called. But anyway, the idea is that you tractor your opponent so they can't go anywhere.
Oh, the anchor.
Put a nice anchor on them, and then go over from one turn to the other, where the first turn, the standard practice of hack and slash maneuver of getting the shield down on the last impulse of the turn, so that the first impulse of the turn, you then have other weapons, in this case, get them down with your phasers and your hellebores, and then, using your... ramp up your fusion beams. Either if you want to, you can do suicide overloads, which is crazy, but you can do it. And fire your fusions at the guy and just totally tear him apart. Because, of course, even to do a tractor, you have to be close in range.
Yep.
So by definition, if you tractor him, you're already within range like two, if not range one.
Yeah, the only thing to keep in mind is that if the enemy's in range, so are you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, of course, an interesting aspect of this battle is those fighters. Because you can use those fighters in one of two ways. You can actually use them offensively. If you want to, you can protect them. You can wait for the ESGs to go down, then launch the fighters. Or, of course, the whole approach of having the fighters come in behind you. Launch them before the final approach, so that they're ready, their weapons are hot. The impulses have gone past, and their weapons are hot. So that the Hydrin, the ship itself, can knock down the ESG, either the Hellbore or with the ship itself, you know, and then the fighters can continue coming in. Now, obviously, Delirium can, if they want to, they can run away from them. But here's the thing. Delirium has disruptors. What's the problem with disruptors? They take quite a bit of power on the turn that you overload them. Because if you're going to be coming in close, invariably, those disruptors, you're going to be firing them, you're going to find them overloaded. And you don't want to try to fire the disruptors against the fighters because of then you have the small turn, small target modifier. Got to remember that name, which is always fun to deal with, especially with fighters. They have, I forget how close they can come before the small target modifier goes bye-bye. I forget.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
Yeah. But, you know, so the Hydra has some nice things that it can do against the Lyran.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for the Lyran, both the ESG and the disruptors take a lot of power. But, invariably, what ends up happening is that with the ESGs, if you ever have to recharge your, obviously, the first turn for the Lyran, what are you doing? You're going to be topping off those ESGs. Period.
I thought they started full.
I have to remember. I'd have to check the rules for ESGs. ESGs are what? I think they're. Okay, let's just look at something. ESGs. I thought that was the correct one. It was G23 is the weapon system number, the rule numbers. Because we should all find out real quick. Legendary officers don't care about that. Yeah, 5 points per on the ESGs. Actually, that is full, isn't it? Okay.
Yes, it is.
And
oh man, I'm hitting a brick wall.
Are you getting tired?
I was at work at 4:30 this morning. Yeah, I was at work at 4:30 this morning, and I was at work at 8:00 tonight. So,
well, if you're fading fast, man, just, you know, go to bed.
I'm already in bed. I'm gonna hang up and go.
Right, then go to sleep. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fine.
All right.
Okay. Well, you have a good night, Barry.
See you next week. Sorry.
Okay. That's okay.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
We lost Barry. Okay. Well, obviously, he was a little tired. As is, he originally called, you know, texted me and said that he might not be able to make it in for the podcast. I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, because it didn't matter whether I had Barry here or not. I was going to. The same topic was going to be the case, which was the Hydrogen versus Lyran. That's because I decided, you know, okay, this is going to be the topic, and I was going to go forward with it, no matter what, whether it was going to be by myself or with Barry. I want, obviously, it's better with Barry because I can bounce off things off him. But obviously, work, you know, just wore him out, and that's fine. Making sure here. Folks, while you're waiting, just give me a sec here. I just want to make sure about one thing. Okay. For some strange reason, I thought they had you could top them off. Okay. I'm wrong. Okay. Obviously, I'm wrong. So they start topped off. But in any case, the big issue, obviously, with the Lyrian and ESGs is the ESGs take a lot of power. They take up to 5 points per. And you, most of the time, you want to completely and utterly have them fully charged to 5. Now, the great thing about the ESGs, of course, are their capacitors. And given that they're capacitors, what that means, Iggy, no. Oh, that was, okay, that's, I thought that might be the case. Thank you, Chris. Give me a sec. I'll double check that because I thought 7 might be the top, but I was not sure about that because I thought it basically used all the energy in the capacitor itself when you fired it. Then I thought like maybe 7 was the X. Da, 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 da. Let's see if I can find. No, the more up to a maximum of 5 points. Yep, that's what I thought. Oh, okay. Oh, here it is. The passer can up to 7 points of energy and release only 1 to 5 points of energy at a time. Okay. And release any unreleased energy remains in the capacitor. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah. Okay, so Right. Okay. So I was right. That you top it off, start with 5 and can be charged all the way up to 7 so that you have the additional power. So when you use it the first time, you can actually then have already 2 points in the ESG. So you only need 3 more points to recharge later on, because obviously at the beginning of the game, you have the most power and the most flexibility because if you start at range, I want to say 35, but I'm pretty sure that's wrong. I feel pretty confident it starts greater than the range 35 because 35 is the maximum range for your drones, for seeking weapons, for controlling seeking weapons, is a maximum range of 35. And also your opponent needs to be within 35 hexes of the seeking weapon, if I recall correctly. That's why I remember range 35. And I'm pretty sure they start at range, I want to say 37, but it could be 40. I can't remember off the top of my head, to be honest. But I know it was greater than 35. But anyhow, so basically the thing is that the beginning of the game, you have the most power and most flexibility. Therefore, if you want to, you could do a corner dodge if you want, or use a slower approach when it comes to approaching the hydrant. Because, okay, this is the one thing that drives me crazy, and which is the whole idea of what I call the dumb battle pass. That on the first turn, what do the opponents do? Boom! They come right in on each other. Why? Why in God's green earth would you always do that? Now, of course, I'm one of those people who's contrarian in that regard, especially when it comes to the Andromedan. Because a lot of times I'd fly the Andromeda, so I would basically do a corner dodge. The idea being is that for the Andromedan, you need the greatest amount of room. It's not wasting time. I'm setting up for, because the one thing with the Andromedan, you can't just rush in, because you rush in, what you're doing. Your greatest distance ever, unless you can actually have your opponent run away, which is not what people want to do with the Andromeda. They want to keep on their tail. Is like range 15. Lord knows I fought John Stiff, but here's the thing. again, why are you so wanting to basically engage in the middle of the board? Is there a reason why you feel the need to, is there a good tactical reason to engage in the middle of the board? Now, obviously, the good thing about engaging in the middle of the board is that you both have room to separate. But, no, I'm not talking about, we're talking about a tournament map, which is fixed map, tournament borders. If you hit the tournament wall, you stop and you go speed 5. You take 5 points of damage and you stop, you go speed 0. This is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, in this case, tournament. I'm not talking about the open map. Open map is a totally different kettle of fish. Totally different kettle of fish. But in tournament play, the thing is, if you close in, then if your opponent decides he's not going to run away, you know, after the first battle pass, and he follows you, you better have some deterrent for them not to follow you. That's the beauty of the Zinni. It's the beauty of all the plasma races, all the beauty of all the drone truckers, is that if you start following them, they'll just go bing, bing, bing. They'll start chucking those seeking weapons at you while you're trying to chase them. And of course, because you're going towards the seeking weapons because you're trying to get to the ship, the amount of closure is quite fast. So, what's the case of the Hydran? Sorry, back up. The Lyran, I'm looking about the other side. Because with the Lyran has no way of basically deterring his opponent from following him. The only deterrent at all would be if you knock down a shield number one. In any case, he might be less likely to go running after your butt, because of obviously he's gonna have his down shield facing you. In which case, you just go bing bing, and that'll definitely deter him. But my assumption here is that the first battle pass, you're not going to get the shield number one. Overall, on the first battle pass, nobody, wants to offer shield number one. Now, the Andromeda can offer shield number one and actually wants you to hit shield number one, or shield number two, or shield number six, all the same thing. While everybody else, you know, when it comes to Andromeda, they want to get the rear shield, or PI panels. Which is understandable. But anyway, so as I said, you know, no one's going to hit the shield number one. But depending upon how let's say that you come in, I'm just thinking about this quickly. Okay, shield number five, let's say shield number six is shield number six. Nice. Oblique. A nice oblique. You fire. Now, the question is, who turns first? Let's say that the Lyran turns first. The Hydran turns. Now he's got a good shield towards the Lyran. And he keeps on chasing him. Now, what's going to stop at some point, that Lyran is going to end up, boom, against the wall. What's the good thing about that wall? Well, let's get out those nice fighters at some point as it heads towards the wall, because of sooner or later, because remember, these are fighters not seeking weapons. Though, of course, Sandy Hemingway called them, mobile nuclear space mines. This is basically what they are, because of their weapons. Because if their weapons get to range zero, you're so toast. So toast. Because they got the two fusions and the one phaser G. So that those fighters can corner you, and there's the additional weapons. And of course, then you have the Hydrant, who can also corner you. Now, and there's nothing that you can do about them to stop them from cornering you at that point. That's why you have to, and as long as the Hydrant can, is, they're both turn mode C. So in theory, as long as the Hydrant is moving slower, because here, this is where outside versus in, outer circle and inner circle matter. Because if you give up that central ground, what happens is that now you're going, you have to go faster to keep up to the same speed that the inner circle person is doing, which can go at a slower speed and get a tighter turn radius and still keep you in his front arc. I've experienced this myself, so I know exactly how it works. So that's why it's like, I look at going right into the center when it comes to that, especially because on this matchup, there is no deterrent. Okay, now, let's say instead of the Laren turning away, the Hydrant turns away. Okay, and the Laren just wants to go chasing after him. Now, this is a little different. The Hydrant does have a deterrent. He does have those fighters. And depending upon timing and so forth, obviously, the Laren on the next turn, depends upon completely about timing here, the Laren on the next turn, he can actually knock, you know, pew, pew, fire down the fighters. But of course, at that point, you're also using up your energy. And after you've gone through the first battle pass, your energy is pretty low. Because at the very least, the Laren has fired six phaser ones. You're probably topped off your ESGs. Not sure if you've raised your ESGs or not. Because you could have raised your ESGs, and then the Hydrant fires Hellbores at the ESGs, knocked down the ESGs, done some damage with the Hellbores, and then fired probably the phase ones, just holding his fusions at that point, because I'm assuming that the Laren is not going to want to get very close, because lo and behold, those phase G's and those fusions can hurt quite a lot. Yeah, Chris, play a little bit of tournament. You'll find out these things. But anyhow, excuse me. So it's more power, which means the next turn, the Laren has to go even slower. And if the Laren goes slower, that means that he can't go as fast. The Hydrant still has to deal with his power consumption issues, because of the Hydrant most probably is not going to overload his Hellbores all the time. Every single battle pass, because of it takes six per Hellbore on the battle turn. So of the 40 power, if you decide to, you can if you want. If the Hydrant decides to overload both Hellbores, that's 12 points of energy. That's 12 points out of 28 points of energy. Then you got the force, the normal four, which you have to take out. So that's 24 points of energy. So if you go, and of course you're holding at least four, let's say you're holding the four fusions. So that goes you down to 20. So your max speed is speed 20 overall. Okay, let's back up. Not max speed, the max movement rate for the turn is 20. Yeah, Dave, there is a barrier along the map edge in the tournament, on the tournament map. That's where if you try to go outside the map, instead of you using a floating map and you actually can move the units, it hits the wall, stops, and takes 5 points of damage on that shield. Now, just a little quick thing on that wall. That wall is not good for the Laren, because also the Laren's if I recall correctly, if the Lyrian's ESG hits the wall, it does damage against the ESG. There's tournament barrier. Just want to see. ESGs interact with the barrier as if they are a web. Note that it is impossible for a unit to be in a barrier hex as the barrier is impermeable and effectively just off the edge. So that means that it doesn't damage the ESG. It just makes it got like a hole in it kind of thing. So, yeah. Yeah, fun stuff. If a unit is displaced off the map, it's put a last edge hex, big surprise. It does not stop or take damage. Note that while displacement into the barrier does not result in a collision with it, a displaced unit's subsequent movement after displacement can result in a collision with the barrier. That is true. Though, as I think I told a story a while back where I voluntarily, as weird as that might sound, voluntarily slammed into the tournament barrier. It was either slam into it or get hit by two Type 4 drones. Lesser two evils, you know? And I almost pulled that one out. Actually, the funny part about that game, in my mind, was that it was one of those games where the Klingon got some internals on me and we had the cascading effect occur. And that was one of those times when, you know, for me, I was dead. You know, when you get the cascading effect, you're dead. But he kept on getting the cascading effect. And actually, with that, we start getting this crowd around us. That they just wanted to see how this cascading effect, how long the cascading effect would occur. How many times would the Klingon roll a drone, which is, the drone hit is what you do for a PA panel. And the PA panel was full. All the PA panels were full. So you knock out a PA panel and boom. Okay, put that aside. Especially if you don't, if your batteries are gone, your batteries are going to be gone pretty quickly. And so you set that aside and you do that. That's another volley. Is that cascade? That's another volley. So we did that for cascaded. I forget if it was three or four times. It's been a long time, so I don't quite remember. But I remember that the last time the cascade happened and we didn't get another cascade, everyone heard oh, you know, because they wanted to keep going. They wanted me to completely blow up in the Andromeda, and to a certain degree, you know, that's I was trying to pull it out and I didn't. It's like, okay, I didn't, but that was, as strange as that might sound, it was fun watching someone else blow up my ship and just the seeing if it was possible to cascade the ship all the way to have it blow up. That was, because it takes, when it comes to the chances of actually doing that, that's pretty slim, you know, but it was incredible. You know, it was a fun way of ending the game after he did the internals, the game was over at that point. You know, it's like, you know, I realized, like, yeah, we could have stopped it there because, you know, after he got the number of internals, and then got the cascade. Said, oh, well, the game's over. But he went, you know, let's see how far this goes. You know? just because at that point, I know we're dead. We both want to see how far it goes. And that's the thing. That's the part of it that made it fun. As strange as that might sound, losing a game, I had so much fun doing that. Especially that part of the game where I was put into a situation where I could either turn in towards the corner, get my phasers in arc and knock down those drones and survive. But the problem is I didn't have enough energy to hit and not hit the barrier. So I had a choice. I could either use the energy I had to fire my phasers and knock down the drones, or I could, basically have them hit me and I'd have the maneuverability, and I did not have that. It's like, no. But anyway, I said that's part of it that made it fun. Okay. Back to the Lyran versus the Hydran. Sorry, I got sidetracked by that, going down memory lane. But anyway, so what does that mean tactically when it comes to speeds and so forth? What's the main tactics here? Obviously, as I mentioned earlier, the big key here when it comes to tactics is the Lyran has to decide, what is he going to be using the ESGs for? Will he use them as these Hellbore shields? Now, if you can use it for Hellbore shields, the one thing you got to do is the Lyran has to press the Hydran. I forced the Hydran to fire his Hellbores because the Hydran knows one thing. He knows that ESG can only be up for 32 impulses. Now, given that it only be up for 32 impulses before it goes bye-bye, or obviously the Lyran can bring it down earlier, the Hydran has the option not to fire. Of course, if he hasn't overloaded, then he has no option. But in which case, you've forced him. See, that's part of what this game is about. When it comes to tactics and so forth, the thing with tactics and the weapons and so forth is forcing your opponent to make decisions. That having you in control of the situation, that's ultimately what you're trying to do. You're trying to control to as degree that you can what your opponent does. So you force him into a situation where he has to make a decision. In the case of the Hydran, if the Lyran brings up his ESG and it's a non-zero, let's say it's range 2. And at that point, if the Hydran is not, has his Hellbores available, and the Lyran is going to be closing, and he knows that the Lyran will hit him. The Hydran has an option at that point. Is the Hydran going to fire his Hellbores, or is the Hydran going to let the ESGs hit his ship and then use the Hellbores to fire purely against the ship and get as much energy, much damage against the ship as possible? And then, of course, you have to remember at that point is, again, there's those choices. And that is that if the Hydran fires the Hellbore at the ESG, it's an automatic hit. So, yes, it's reduced the amount of damage that you're going to apply to the Lyran shields, possibly even the Lyran ship itself. But it's a guaranteed hit. Versus having he rams into you, you take the damage to your shields, and of course after that he is going to follow up that same impulse and go boo, and hopefully your Hellbores will survive, because most probably he'll get an internal, if not multiple internals. No, actually, at that point, it doesn't matter because you're going to be fine. If you let it hit you, after he hits you, you're going to fire immediately on that hellbore, using your hellbore upon a ship. So there won't be any degradation in amount of damage. But at that point, you're rolling the dice. And I have seen it. I've seen it with my own eyes. Hellbores that have a person flying the hydrant and then fire the hellbore and they get 2 sixes. So they roll a 12 at a range 1. So they completely and utterly miss. And now you got nothing. You got absolute nothing. So, again, the Liren has to force the choices upon the Hydran. Now, if the Liren wants to, he can definitely save up his ESGs and don't use them. Oh, agreed. Agreed. Well, Iggy, I agree that guess having the thinking that your opponent is gonna okay, thinking that you're gonna miss a 1 in 36 chance of missing with a hellbore, you know, basing the strategy of, you know, you're gonna guarantee a hit at range 2 versus a possibility of a miss on range 1. Yeah, I understand that. But of course, then you have to take in consideration at that point also is going to be the ESGs are going to hit your ship and can you take that damage? But the only reason I pointed out that slim, I know it's slim. There is still that possibility that you'll miss. I'm not saying that should be your overriding fear that you're going to miss. But if this is like the death blow where you've got to kill him or you're dead yourself, you know, are you going to take that chance? You might be able to take a lesser damage and still survive. But if you miss that hellbore completely, then you're toast. There's that possibility, and that's one thing to think about. Now, as I was getting into, which is the Liren, obviously, if you want to, you completely obfuscate that fact and just have it so that you try to use the ESGs when the Hydrant is charging his Hellbores. Now, of course, at the same time, the Hydrant is going to be charging Hellbores, so is he going to want to engage? No, he's going to not want to engage. In that case, that is when this whole going to the center board and then have the Hydrant turn off instead of you turn off comes into play. Because one thing to keep in mind about this matchup is that the Hydrant is susceptible to Mizzy attacks. Therefore, let's say that the Liren wants to take advantage of at least at the very least that fear. Because that is a fear that which is has some merit in it, and that is that if the Liren is willing to hold back, let's say this one phaser, just one, and then what that might do is instead of. Because you're on the oblique, if you just continue going and you're not, and the Liren has not to be afraid of not getting some additional internals. Because obviously you got the phaser 3, so you should be pretty protected against losing that phaser 1. And at that point, the Hydrant was probably just going to want to turn away. You can turn in against him at that point. Now, obviously, it's new shield, but that's the whole point. The Hydrant is going to want to bring the bear that new shield, in which case the Liren can be the chaser instead of the chasee. So I think it's a it's a, it, you limit the amount of damage that you can do against the Hydran. Now, on the first battle pass, here's always the gotcha of the first battle passes. The first battle pass, you have to, you can't overload all four disruptors. Period. You can't. Because of, if you're going slow and your opponent sees that you're going slow and he goes, he's going really slow. That means one of two things. Either he's using a lot of a reinforcement, possible, or they've got their disruptors fully overloaded, which takes a lot of power, in which case you're going much slower. He might stay out of range eight. Might say, you know, I'm going to go corner dodge. And so it's going to completely waste that first turn, that the strategy that you had of firing all four fully overloaded disruptors at him. Most often used strategy is this, and that is half of the disruptors are overloaded, half of them are not. Because of the one thing you can do in that situation is you can, if you want to, if you really feel the need to overload, you think it's a good situation to use it and do it, you can then use two points of power to make change the standards to overloads. Now, the reason why that's used is because just in case that the Hydran decides I'm not going to engage fully, meaning he's not going to get within overloaded range on that turn. At least at that point, you're not wasting 16 points of energy for nothing. So that's why they hedge their bets by only overloading two of the disruptors and leave two of the disruptors standard. So let's look at the Hydra's approach for a moment. What's the Hydra going to want to do? Well, the Hydra's going to do what the Hydra's going to want to do, and that is the Hydra wants to get up close and personal. Now, the obvious issue with getting up close and personal is that when you get up close and personal, that you have the issue that Mizzy attacks. And as I pointed out earlier in the podcast, the whole issue of why Paul Scott gave up on trying to use the Hydran to get the gold hat, because of his opponents were able to not even, you know, they were able to knock out enough weapons early on in the fight for him to go, I give up. Because Paul Scott is a very good player, and he evaluates the situation quickly and very well. So he feel in theory, I'm willing to bet you that Paul Scott probably could have pulled out some of those battles, but he did not feel like it was worth his time to try on a desperate chance that his opponent was going to screw up and he was going to win. You know, so I think it was right for switching, and that just points out that it's hard to win in the Hydran, and I know, and I understand that, and overall, I think that the cult of being the Jets, 42-10. Dang. Middle of the third, just in case you want to know. You can win in the Hydran. I'm not saying you can't. If you enjoy playing the Hydran, please play the Hydran. It's like me playing the Andromeda. The Andromeda invariably loses because there are certain matchups which it doesn't have much of a chance against. But the Hydra can win. It's just that it has to be cognizant of the issue of Mizzia. And depends. And obviously, part of that, and just like any other tournament ship, it depends upon what matchups you get. Because the Hydra, you know, if the hydrant is facing, like, let's say the, well, I was thinking about the Fed, but the hydrant Fed is an interesting situation in that they both want to be close, but it's, and the both of them don't want to be close. It's a tough situation because of range two is when the Fed wants to be there because it has the best chance of hitting with 64 points of damage with four fully overloaded photons. Versus the hydrant, which wants range two, so he can fire his phaser G's, fire his fusions, hit with his hellbores, and possibly even bring his fighters to bear. Now, the thing is, there was a modification to the Fed so that those fighters might be a little less effective because of it actually has some ADRAX, so it can actually try to knock them down. And it could possibly do it because it's got, I think it's got enough ad rounds. Sorry. It's got a Type G drone rack. So it can fire ad rounds. It's one of those weird animals. But anyhow. So the hydrogen overall, it's got a chance. But, you know, it just has to be cognizant of the Mizzia effect. So, you know, so as I pointed out, it has to possibly turn away when normally you wouldn't have to. Now, obviously, here's the thing. In that same situation, which I just mentioned, where the Lyran holds back that phaser, let's say that the Lyran doesn't hold back that phaser. Now, obviously, he automatically will be holding back like two of his phasers. Now, this is where it gets difficult. Because of if the hydrant has the forethought to hold his batteries, number one, because the batteries will never die, because you have to get through all the center holes for it to die. He wants to hold those batteries back. And the hydrant is going faster than the Lyran. And the Lyran decides it's going to hit to get those two phaser ones to bear. And the thing is, the Lyran's going to know this. That you're held back your batteries. He'll know it. And if he thinks that you have not, then he's going to hit. But if he feels like you did, he won't do this, which is, because it'd be pointless. Which is him heading to get on your down shield and then you heading away. Or heading to get your shield your down shield away from the fire. Now, that's why I say that the Lyran has to left at least one phaser unfired to force the hydrant to turn. But if the Lyran doesn't do that, the Lyran decides, you know, I'm willing to fire that additional phaser because I want the additional, what, 4 points of damage, possibly? Depends upon the range, obviously. Let's say four. Then, given that, let's say, hydrogen was probably just going to, it can keep going though. Obviously, if the Lyran still has the 360 phaser threes, and if he wants to fire them, fire. You know, you've got that range is probably going to be a 1/3 chance of getting an eternal for half a point of energy. Yeah, would you take the chance? Probably take the chance because it's a nice down shield and you can do some busy damage. You know, you can knock out an additional hellbore. And if you do that, hey, you won. You know, good. Yeah, the luck was with you. But if you miss, you better be turning soon, dude. Because the hydrant will be turning in towards you, and he won't care that the shield's facing you. obviously the hydrant has to be careful because of when the land turns away, all of a sudden the other side can come into arc. But you know, if you turn early enough, you can probably keep, you know, if you sideslip towards the Lyran, then you could probably keep that down shield away from them. So it's an interesting matchup to watch. You know, it has some real tough tactical decisions that have to be made. And obviously one of those tactical decisions for the Hydrant also is, how is it going to use the fighters? You know, when it comes to Lyran, it's much different, much, much different than any Seeking Weapon. Because Seeking Weapon, what you might do is launch your fighters, then tractor them, drag them along with you so they can keep up with you. And then when the Seeking Weapon is launched, you can let go of the tractors and you can use them for basically additional two phaser Gs against any Seeking Weapon, and poof, they disappear. You know, so anyhow, I think I'll wrap it up with that. You know, please, you know, if you have an opportunity, play some tournament ships, because they're interesting. I'm not saying they are balanced, because no ships will be balanced, you know, no matter what. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.